The 26th story, Wanderings in the Wilderness. The wilderness now became the home of the Israelites. For many years they wandered from place to place, living just as their forefathers had lived, the life of wandering shepherds. The little children grew up to be strong boys and girls in this free mountainous region and became men and women before the land of Canaan was reached. You will remember that this wilderness was not just a sandy tract of land. In parts it was a desert, but it was also one of the wildest, grandest, as well as barren places with its rocky cliffs and lonely mountaintops in all their many hues of color. In other parts were green and fertile spots of pasture lands, and roundabout palm trees and even gardens might be found. Think how different the children's lives were to those of their fathers and mothers. They did not know either the hard times of slavery nor the good things of Egypt. They did not see the wonderful buildings of man, but they saw the grand mountains of God. They would climb the rocky cliffs and wade in the streams, and sometimes they would help in finding new springs and shady places for the sheep and cattle. Often they would go out with their fathers with bows and arrows, and again they would sit with them and listen to the strong words of Moses, their leader. Day by day, they grew hardy and brave. Why did not the Israelites go directly to Canaan? It was only a march of 200 miles, which could be traveled in a few weeks. But when the choice to go by way of the Red Sea was made, they were not strong soldiers. God had said to Moses, "As soon as they see war, they will return to Egypt." Moses knew they would be cowards and run away. They had been slaves too long to stand bravely and hold their own. He knew also that they could not fight the Philistines and the people who lived in Canaan. They needed to be trained as good soldiers. Then, too, in Egypt, the children of Israel had lost much of the faith and of the good ways of the patriarchs. They needed to learn to know God and to know what was right and what was wrong. While in this way they were growing strong, their children would become still stronger. So, from the shores of the Red Sea, Moses led the Israelites into the wilderness of Shur. That was the place, you remember, to which Hagar went. After a tiresome journey of 3 days through the desert, in which they saw only limestone hills on either side, the people grew very weary. They also began to suffer for want of water. At last they reached a spring and rejoiced at the sight. Many of them were thirsty and hurried to get a drink. But how disappointed they were to find the water bitter and horrid to the taste. What were they to do? At once the people began to fret and to complain to Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" Guided by God, Moses found a tree which he cast into the waters. Immediately the waters were made sweet, and the people drank. And in that place God made a covenant of guidance and protection for his people. From Marah, this place of bitter waters, the horde of people came to Elim, a beautiful spot with a grove of 70 palm trees and 12 springs of water. There, under the shade of the trees, they rested and refreshed themselves. There they decided to set up their tents, and they stayed there for some time. The life of the Israelites was much like that of the Arab tribes today. They lived in black tents made of goat's hair, and the men probably wore the long tunic and the goat's hair mantle which is seen nowadays. This was their protection by day and served also as a bed at night. Their supply of food varied. Sometimes they could get plenty from the neighboring fields. They always had milk from the goats and the curds they made from it, and occasionally they might have meat from the herds and flocks they brought with them. There were settlers, too, in some districts from whom they could obtain supplies. But in the sandy wilderness of Sin, the people ran short of provisions. At once they grumbled and grew discontented. They found fault with Moses and longed for the meat in the flesh pots of Egypt and for the old time when they could eat bread to the full. "We remember," they said, "the fish we had in Egypt and the melons and the onions and the garlic." Moses and Aaron reminded them that God would provide and said, "What are we that ye should murmur against us? Jehovah has heard your murmuring. He will give you flesh to eat in the evening and in the morning bread, that ye may know that he is your God. That same evening, as the people looked out from their tent doors, they saw a great flight of quail. These hovered for a time over the camp, then settled down where they could be easily killed, and everyone had flesh to eat, even as God had said. They began to believe that God was indeed taking care of them. Again in the morning they were surprised to find small round flakes of a white honey-like substance covering the ground. They had never seen anything like this before and began asking one another, "What is it?" Moses told them that it was the bread which God had provided for his people, and he gave them directions as to the use of it. They were to gather each morning only enough for each family's use that day, and on the sixth day twice as much, so that no work should be done on their Sabbath day. They called their new food, which they were so glad to get, manna, and for 40 years God sent it fresh every morning, excepting on the Sabbath. So it is that God always provides for his children. It was in this way that the Israelites learned to depend on and trust in God during their many years of wandering. As they traveled on, they came to Rephidim, and again the people thirsted for water. And again these ungrateful people fretted and reproached Moses for having brought them out of Egypt. Moses, in despair, cried to God, "What shall I do unto this people? They are almost ready to stone me." And God said, "Take thy rod wherewith thou smotest the river, and I will be with thee when thou standest upon the rock in Horeb, and thou shalt smite the rock, and there shall come water out of it, that the people may drink." This rod had been with the Israelites as a symbol of God's power all through the wilderness journey. They looked upon it with awe, for it reminded them of many things. In accordance with the command, Moses, his rod in his hand, passed on before the people, taking with him the three elders, and in the presence of them all, he climbed to the rock in Horeb, and lifting his rod, smote it. Out came clear, sparkling water, and the men, women, and children drank of it. By and by they came to a settlement where a strong tribe of the Amalekites was dwelling. They were a warlike people, and when they saw the caravans of Israelites approaching, they decided to oppose their advance. As soon as Moses found out what the Amalekites proposed to do, he said to Joshua, one of his most able men, "Choose some men who can go out and fight the Amalekites. Tomorrow thou must be their leader, and I will stand on the top of the hill with the rod of God in my hand. In that way I will encourage and guide the men." So Joshua did as Moses told him to do, and with his picked men he went out to fight. As the soldiers passed from the camp, the song rang out while they marched along, "Rise up, Jehovah, and let thine enemies be scattered, and let them that hate thee flee before thee." As they saw Moses on the mountaintop with the rod uplifted in his hand, they went forward with enthusiasm. They could see the savage warriors approaching, some on foot, some on swift steeds with long lances shining out from their flying garments. The Israelites, with arrow, spear, and sword, fought with all their might and shot down the Amalekites. As the battle went on and on, Moses' hands grew heavy. At last he let them down. The great leader was tired out. Joshua's men looked up. They could not see the rod that had inspired them. Just a look at their commander had given them courage. Without it, they began to fail. Aaron and Hur, who had gone up with Moses, saw what was the matter. Hurriedly, they got a stone on which Moses could sit. Then they upheld his hands, one on either side, until the going down of the sun. Encouraged once more by their great leader, and led by the great and brave Captain Joshua, the men defeated Amalek, the king, and his people at the edge of the sword. Well might they sing in triumph on their return, "Jehovah rose up, his enemies were scattered, and those that hated him fled before him." So proud were they of this victory, they wanted people to know of it. So Moses built an altar as a memorial and called the name of it Jehovah Nissi, By this he said, Jehovah is my banner. Somebody had gone and told Moses' father-in-law, Jethro, the sheik of Midian, of all that Moses, with God's help, had done for the Israelites, how they had fled from Egypt, had crossed the Red Sea, and had traveled through the wilderness, until now they were in the neighborhood of Midian. How strange and wonderful all this was! He decided to take Zipporah and her two sons, for Moses had sent them to the old home for a time, and to go to the encampment to see Moses. Come, said he to his daughter, let us take the boys and go. When Moses heard they were coming, he went out to welcome them. He took Jethro into the tent and told him all the wonderful things that had happened. Now I know, said Jethro, that Jehovah is greater than all gods. The next day Moses went out and sat as judge for the people. They came before him from morning till evening, with their many disputes and quarrels and difficulties. When Jethro saw all that his son-in-law was doing with the people, he asked him about it. Moses said, when they have any trouble, they come to me, and I judge between a man and his neighbor, and I make them know the statutes of God and his laws. His father-in-law said to him, what thou doest is not good. Thou wilt surely wear away, for the thing is too heavy for thee to do all alone. Now hearken to me, and I will give thee counsel. Choose thou, out of all the people, able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating unjust gain, and place such over them. Let them be rulers of thousands, ruler of hundreds, rulers of 50, and rulers of 10, and let them judge the people at all seasons. And it shall be that every great matter they shall bring to thee, but every small matter they shall judge themselves. So shall it be easier for thyself, and they shall bear the burden with thee. And thou shalt speak to God for the people, and thou shalt teach them the statutes and the laws, and shall show them the way wherein they must walk, and the work they must do. Moses decided to take Jethro's advice. He chose able men out of all Israel, and made them heads over the people, to act as judges for them. He divided the tribes into larger and smaller groups, and set the wisest men over the larger ones, and the others over the smaller ones. The hard cases of dispute they brought before Moses, but every small matter they judged themselves. So the wise man, Jethro, was a good advisor to Moses. After helping him make this better plan for his people, Jethro returned to his own land and home.